Welcome to a great episode of Innovation Odyssey. I know it's going to be great because I do love the two people on the podcast with me. Who I have with me are Małgosia Tastis, who is the CEO of Drive, and Roberto Sicconi, who is the CTO and co-founder of Drive. Both of them are co-founders. So welcome, Maggie and Roberto.
Thank you very much, Renu. We're delighted to be here. My name is, as you spelled it out, Małgorzata Elżbieta Stysz, aka Maggie. I'm the CEO and co-founder, one of the two co-founders of Drive. And I would say, you know, Drive's mission is to prevent accidents on the road. So we're on that mission, in short. This podcast series, the theme of the podcast series is Innovation Odyssey. So while neither Roberto or I are King Odysseus, I think every entrepreneur experiences the journey of ups and downs. And that's what we're experiences. It makes you tougher. It makes you more resilient. And it makes you solve challenges in no time. So that's my little intro. And Roberto, over to you.
Yeah, my name is Roberto Sicconi. I'm also co-founder at Drive. I'm the technology guru in the company. I've been fascinated by technology advances all my life, and in particular, human-machine interfaces. I started very early on with the speech recognition, synthesis, image processing, dialogue management, and natural language processing, culminating with the AI at the time I was at IBM. And I see a huge opportunity for people to take advantage of AI in various forms and fashions, using portable and wearable devices to assist them in life, have more productivity, but also have a safer life and protection from risks. And this is the angle that we are taking at Drive.
So what does Drive do?
Drive is substantially a mobile app that runs on your phone or a dedicated unit that looks at the scene, the road scene, looks at you, is aware of the risks around or in front of you, and can give you real-time feedback on things that you should change in your driving habits. It also collects information for later coaching if you're a professional driver working for fleet or if you work, if you have an insurance. It gives a highlight to the insurance about your driving style, and again, items or pieces of information needed to understand how you're coping with risk and how well your premium could be reduced because you are an excellent driver.
What percentage of your users are fleet versus personal?
As of today, we are primarily working with the commercial fleets. So we are talking about the professional drivers all the way down to gig workers. But the technology itself is designed to work on regular phones, so it can be used by any driver, and eventually like to get into the personal auto space also.
And we are working with insurance. So Drive, in a nutshell, is this dynamic new paradigm that we're introducing for managing losses in real time and in context. So those two things are really key for our differentiation. Roberto mentioned briefly the gig economy. You know, with the advent of gig economy and now it's growing rapidly, there is a great need for solutions that would enhance transparency, that would provide compliance solutions, quality assurance solutions. So, you know, one-stop shop is what we provide on the phone, right? Video analytics, video analytics, but it goes beyond the risk mitigation and losses on the road. It can also help in the delivery process, streamline that whole process, which is extremely important in the emerging gig economy space.
Do you have a breakdown of exact breakdown of like how many gig economy versus more professional or standardized fleet drivers?
Yeah, if you focus on the U.S., there's about 3.5 million professional drivers who have a CDL license. They typically drive trucks, semis. And then there's about, I would say, 5 million gig workers, but the total number is about 15 million drivers who use different types of vehicles at any time. part-time, full-time. So the number of smaller vehicles is much larger than the large ones, and potentially a bigger market for us. And then if you talk about personal auto, you're talking about 200 million. So that's the progression. We want to start with commercial, professional, and then look out for any kind of vehicle.
When it comes to the gig economy, because they go doing gigs, is your app on when they are not doing gigs?
No, the app is smart enough to understand where you are on a trip. And then you have to declare whether the trip is for pleasure or for business. Only if it's for business and you authorize it, then it's going to record information and transfer it to the company you're working with.
I see. Okay. That's AI.
Yeah, that's a key aspect. As a matter of fact, privacy is very important to us. We want to make sure that we only collect information that is pertinent. We don't want to invade people's privacy in life in any way. And even then, we can selectively decide what information can be transferred to the recipient. So if you're working for a fleet, you can decide how much of the data about the trip, about yourself, video set can be transferred. And in some cases, we can also provide information about the state or status of or quality of your driving without providing any evidence if that's required.
Okay. Do you have evidence of how... Like fleets, do they play back to you how they use it?
Yes. Well, there's multiple needs. The basic need is to manage the fleet, understand where the driver is at any given time so that you can intervene if necessary. The second one is understanding what is happening on the scene so you can decide which routes, for instance, are more risky and then learn from that and then tell other drivers to stay away from certain places. The third one is understanding how the driver is coping with it. They may have drivers who are better at dealing with certain types of risks than others and then can be used for internal sorting and coaching. The fourth one is understanding how the driver is actually paying attention, and that requires a specific driving coaching sessions. Some of them are real-time, some are offline. And then the fifth one is collecting information about the overall compliance to safety of the fleet so that the insurance company who is insuring the fleet can decide how to deal with the fleet and raise or reduce the premium accordingly.
You know, Renu, we get a lot of feedback from drivers themselves. One particular case that I just want to recall here, we had a driver who wasn't sure about the usage of, you know, the video processing, especially in inside of the cabin. He was on the drowsy side. I don't know if he slept at all, but he was very drowsy driving. He had a lot of drowsy events. And it wasn't until he actually saw the video clips of himself falling asleep behind the wheel that, you know, he really said to us, wow, I mean, I was not aware that I was that drowsy driving around, you know, and most people, I think, underestimate their level of drowsiness, including myself. I had a couple of drowsy accidents in the past, and I just thought, yes, I'm going to make it to the exit, and I did. But ended up in a ditch. So, you know, I think it's important to have this kind of a companion. This is where the AI piece also comes in, right? Having a companion, I wouldn't call it co-pilot now because that's reserved for other things, but co-driver, companion, your guardian angel, a piece of technology that's out there that's looking out for you in the background when needed, if needed.
There's another important piece, which is the real-time feedback. Imagine being a gig driver driving through Manhattan, busy with very busy traffic, and it's easy to look in the wrong direction. Like you're looking to the left to get into traffic, and at the same time, pedestrian sees you not moving, decides to cross the road before you, and you may not be aware of this. So what we have, the system recognizes potential upcoming risks nearby, and realize that you're not looking at them, and then it can give you a warning so that you don't get surprised by all of a sudden having somebody in front of you and having to stop right after staring. That's the kind of things that can only be done if you have a real-time analysis of the scene, both inside and outside the cabin, and then provide the real-time feedback so the driver can intervene. It's more important than monitoring just the driver. It's understanding the scene, providing feedback, and prevent crashes in the first place.
Do you have any evidence of how well you perform in inclement weather? Are there any stories that you can share?
In inclement weather?
Yeah, like bad weather, there's a storm, and that your app helped fleet drivers. Do you have any?
Well, you know, one of the provisions we have is the app checks the weather regularly, and that information is used to compensate for margins. So the real-time feedback I'm talking about is corrected by low visibility, by rain conditions that may make the road slippery. We have information from the digital map that tells us if a road ahead is known to be slippery, and then if we know that it's raining or you have ice conditions, then the warnings come much earlier. So you get informed when it's needed. In a sunny, dry day, you don't get information about slippery roads. But if it's a rainy day of icy, yes.
What was your, I would say, both professional and personal motivation for doing Drive?
Let me take this one. Roberto, right? My co-founder and myself, we come from the AI world, which I think, you know, when we first started was not considered to be that hip or that popular. And I think working at IBM gave us a pretty good understanding of how to develop effective human-car interactions and AI systems. We saw an incredible potential in the space of car safety, where you can apply very powerful AI analytics and both the road and in cabin for both the road and in cabin scenes to basically preserve safe margins at all times. Do it in a very holistic context. So we see insurance as this market opportunity for that's ripe for innovation, that is suffering from a lot of losses, especially in the commercial trucking space, from nuclear verdicts. And we're coming in as the superheroes here with, the market adoption of AI risk mitigation systems that would help in the loss reduction for insurance companies, but more importantly, would guard and guide and coach the drivers on the road.
Yeah, in my case, I think it was a sort of an evolution of the target. I was always passionate about providing people an easy way to deal with computers. And of course, I love the idea of having computers in the car. Beginning of early 2000s, a lot of car makers started in providing infotainment solutions, mostly to listen to music and have some navigation systems. I started working, it was at IBM with a major Japanese maker who was interested in removing all the buttons from the dashboard, a dream that was obtained by Tesla many years later. And the goal was to provide speech recognition as the main or sole channel for interaction between the driver and the car. And again, the idea was this way the driver can hand the hands on the wheel and look at the road and not to be distracted. So we created a very nice product that put this company, I'm not saying the name, but they put the leadership of conversation capabilities in the car. At the same time, as we were working with this, we realized that the speech can be distracting too. So if you start having too much conversation at the wrong time, and the other the counterpart, let's say the infotainment system, is asking you questions, so when you're busy trying to avoid a collision, that's not a good time. So the idea of passenger, an intelligent passenger who is aware of what is happening and wants to talk to you but decides to stop talking, it became a leitmotif of what we are doing. And to do that, we have to be able to understand what the driver is actually doing and thinking. And so we had to provide the camera input and do the same thing that an intelligent passenger would do. I look at the driver, decide, is this a good time to talk or not? I'll suspend and keep shut for a while. So that was really the main motive. And then we decided where to apply it. We initially started thinking of teenage drivers who were at the biggest risk. And then we decided that the best opportunity was the commercial space. And in order to provide safety as a financial incentive, we decided to go with insurance. This is really the main reason.
Did you think about working with like the driverless vehicles, especially driverless trucks? Was that something you considered?
It's actually, I would say, as time goes by, it becomes more evident that the transition is not going to be digital. There's going to be a very smooth transition from legacy cars to partially driving assisted, as you can buy today, to fully self-driving. Even what is called today full self-driving is not really full self-driving. It requires supervision. And that supervision is very hard to maintain. Humans are very good at deciding things under stress. They tend to relax a little too much when there is no stress. And if the driver, if the car is doing most of the driving, it's very easy to not pay attention and falling asleep. So that's one situation that we think we can position ourselves in. To help in transition to self-driving vehicles. Once you get to vehicles that have no steering wheel, no pedals, then no, we don't. We are not needed for safety anymore. We could be using the auto technology for other reasons to interact with drivers, with the passengers in the cabin for other reasons, and decide who is sleeping and doesn't want to be disturbed by music or other things, or that kind of things. But for now, it's all about driving safety and making sure that the driver is capable of taking over responsibilities of driving if the car cannot handle.
And Drive is currently U.S. focused?
It's currently U.S. focused, but we are certainly looking at the European market. Actually, I've been looking at it for quite a while. So we're now planning some engagements, particularly in Poland and Italy, those two places for us. We are also having active conversations with Mexico, and that market is a very different market, very different needs for fleets and insurance companies. It's actually pretty fascinating. So I would say we're not limiting ourselves to the U.S., but we're obviously based here, and we're starting with the U.S. market.
Can I ask about Mexico? What is like the top difference between Mexico and US? One or two?
I would say Mexico has two types of safety issues. One is driving safety, because the drivers tend to be a little on the creative side. And the rules are not enforced as much as they are here or in Europe. The other one is personal safety aspects. There are situations where drivers are at risk of being robbed. And one of the things we are doing is trying to help them protect themselves. And in case something happens, also document what happened.
Which I think is the same. If I think about India, the scale is just probably bigger. I don't think, you know, fleet in India is safe by any means. Not people there on the road. It's just, it's a different animal altogether. So, but do you think that your technology can be used in many of these parts of the world where really traffic is a struggle because of the population, because of the attitude towards rules? Do you think that Drive can be used to help human beings literally save lives?
Absolutely. We had a very interesting conversation a while back with a leading manufacturer in India of motorcycles. And you may say, well, why motorcycles? Well, because there's a lot of them in India. And then traffic is particularly, exuberant. You have to have 10 eyes around your head to check everything that's moving before you're behind you on the side. So I think that technology like ours can definitely help understand where risk is coming. And of course, an experienced motorcyclist anticipates risks and looks in the right direction all the time. But beginners may not, and this is where we can help.
And the mere fact that we are offering on a phone, which is a pretty light platform, and relatively inexpensive, right? If you have a phone, you can download the app and off you go. That, I think, also counts towards, you know, feasibility of that solution, its implementation for that particular market.
So the fleet owners, they have like a company-wide subscription?
Yeah, in the case of, local delivery based on motorcyclists, yes, the fleet wants to know where the motorcycles are, which one has delivered, which one is on the way, which one is stuck somewhere. But we primarily want to provide the help to the driver, to the rider. This is where the biggest value is.
Definitely the advantages and the value, big value, is for the fleet owner, right? The fleet manager being aware of where your vehicles are. It can be a delivery fleet. It can be a fleet of vehicles that a company owns, but is being used by their salespeople, right? I mean, it doesn't have to be carrying goods, but as a company owner, you still want to know, where is my vehicle? Was it used for the right purpose? Is it being close to an accident? And of course, you care about the employees very much. But you also want to know what's happening to the vehicles that the company pays for and maintains.
Do you currently have insurers or MGAs as clients, or are they in the pipeline?
We have an insurance, an MGA company that we have established a partnership with. They're right here in New York City, and we are looking at a pipeline of insurers, bigger, smaller, MGAs included.
What do you think is the biggest roadblock to an insurer being your client, other than the sales cycle, which we know is ridiculously long? What is the what is one or two reasons as a roadblock?
With any new technology, the hesitation comes from show me proof. How do I know that by installing the system, I can get this kind of reduction in crashes or more efficient system? And when, as a startup, when the beginning, you always have this big obstacle, wanting to show, but not being able to show yet. And then only once things get going, then it becomes easy. And then in retrospect, say, okay, of course. But you have to get to the point.
But I mean, obstacles are not new to both of you, right? Going back to your own personal histories, you've lived and worked in different countries, and the US is almost like a last stop, if I'm right.
Yes. Yes, that's part of the Odyssey journey, right? Everyone has that. But I think in my case, I would say I've had a very unique opportunity. And this is, I give a lot of credit to my parents for that, to have lived in six different countries before settling here in the U.S. And yes, it was mostly my parents at first, but then, it was not through a company mandate. I actually did go to India. India, I haven't lived there, but I went to India through my IBM work assignments. But, in terms of taking my own initiative, I lived in England, in Sweden. It was brought up in Nigeria, Botswana, Swaziland, also on my list. So a lot of really, far away exotic countries. But I would say, that made me much more adaptable than I would have been otherwise. Gave me a pretty unique perspective. And in a way, fueled the sense of adventure, which we share with Roberto, fueled the creativity, which you need in the startup world. And I think also made me more resilient along the way. And you need that. In startup, you need all these qualities. You know this, Renu, right? That same adventurous spirit that you've got to be willing to take chances. I think Roberto, being the aspiring race car driver, is definitely, less risk averse than me. But you have to be willing to take some chances, create innovation, find new ways to sell it, right? So it's, entrepreneurship is both about having that innovative product, but also taking it to market. Very important. And that requires a lot of resiliency, a lot of patience.
Oh, I didn't live in as many countries, but I grew up between Italy and Austria and Germany. And then I moved to the States. But I also had, thanks to my work assignments, had many opportunities to go to Japan, some places in Africa, in Mexico. So it was very formative to understand how different cultures think about the same issues, including traffic and driving styles and regulations. So it opens up your mind. And whenever you do something in one country, there's other countries that see things differently and you need to prepare for
it. Renu, if I may just add, I forgot the most important country for me. Of course, it's Poland. That's where I was born and initially brought up. So my heart belongs to the US, where I stay right now, but definitely to Poland and Nigeria, where I grew up.
Oh, they're so different countries, but that's beautiful.
Yes, I think it's a very unique. I'm very grateful for this experience.
Do you speak any African languages?
You know, I used to be a language buff many lives ago. And I was in high school. And it was actually an American missionary school in Jos, Nigeria, Plateau State. I was in Hausa land. So Hausa, Igbo, and Yoruba are the three main languages in Nigeria. And my big aspiration was to learn a little bit of Hausa. And that really gave you a big pass to, you know, negotiating in the marketplace, getting the best deals, you know, talking with people. So, you know, everyone more or less speaks English there. But if you did speak a little bit of Hausa like I did, that could take you a long way.
Roberto, you speak especially Deutsch?
Yeah. I started with German. Matter of fact, when I got to school, my father insisted, my mother was Austrian, that I stopped talking German at home, because otherwise my Italian would be tainted and that could affect my career. So English came later. I learned in school and then I started traveling and eventually landed here.
Oh, you've done all of these like adventures together and separately. Do you miss that? The physical fun of going somewhere and maybe relocating and learning something? Do you miss that? Or is that all involved in like all of that goes into drive and maybe the kids or things like that?
Do I miss it? Yes. I really like the idea of changing your life. You know, substantially. I wouldn't mind moving again. But yeah, each time there's a little period of adjustments that you have to find yourself acclimate with the surroundings and different rules. And every time it's a surprise and then you get used to it and then you're ready for another change. So it's, in a sense, it's a way of feeling more citizen of the world rather than citizen of a particular country. And I think it opens up your mind and you're more willing to listen to different opinions, different ways of thinking. You know, at some point I was going steadily to Japan with some Japanese colleagues. And I didn't speak Japanese, but I learned a few words. And I learned how to interpret the gestures. So sometimes we'd have a conversation and the conversation was partially in English, partially in Japanese. I was trying to follow what the Japanese people would talk to each other about and get a sense of it. And then when they were talking, trying to speak English as well as they could, I was the only one who could understand their English. The American folks, I had no idea what they were saying. So, I think you're building some elasticity in your brain that allows you to compensate for unexpected pronunciations, ways of thinking. So you have a little, you know, some extra tools to deal with unexpected situations.
You know, Japan would be a really fun place to go to. And, you know, as you go through your life, you'd think, oh, you know, maybe you become more settled in your ways. But that's obviously, as you could hear, not the case with Roberto. In one of the reasons why we're looking at the European market is to see if can we, you know, handle both US and Europe? Why not? And I think unlike, let's say, 20 years ago, right now we're all closer together. Right? It's like the whole, but it's, you know, yes, we act here globally, but there's like a global context to everything. So we're closer than ever. Communication is closer, right? I mean, we have the internet, we have podcasts like this that we can share. So who cares where you live, right? We could be somewhere in the middle of the Caribbean, which by the way, is not my dream place. It's not, you know, I'm happy here. I'd be happy to, you know, settle back to Europe for some time.
Yeah, just to close the circle with where we started, I think technology has made the world much smaller. If I think of my first trip to Japan, I couldn't read the characters. I barely knew any words. I was lost looking at maps and trying to ask for information for people who did not speak any English. So I really felt like this is like being on the moon. And then years later, I had a cell phone that at least gave me some the feeling of being able to call somebody if I needed to. And then the cell phone was also able to run things like a Google Maps and then translated the characters from Japanese to English so they could read the map and figure out where to go. And then with Google Translate, I was able to understand partially what they were saying and then translate whatever. So I think the handheld technology that you can wear and take with you is reducing most of those barriers, making it much easier to understand what do you need to do and where you want to go and what other people are saying. And that's a big help.
I have a trademark question, which is, are you an entrepreneur or an innovator? And for as I look at both of you, am I looking at us as an entrepreneur-innovator combo or innovator-innovator or entrepreneur-entrepreneur or what the hell? It doesn't matter.
Okay. I think both of us are, doing a startup, you know this, Renu, you have to be both. Entrepreneur and innovator, as they have to have that, you know, both elements in your bloodstream. I let Roberto speak for himself. I think for me, I definitely have this, you know, entrepreneurial vein in me for creating new ideas, being fascinated by what those ideas can accomplish. And I mean, in the space where we are, there's an immense potential of AI systems to help drivers. I don't know. If there is another better, you know, space to create impact. So that's very fascinating, you know, but you also have to, so that's the innovator part of me. The entrepreneur part of me, you know, is kind of the practical part, right? And in a big company, you can just do innovation, right? I mean, and you don't, other people will take care of the, of taking it to market. In a startup, you need to be entrepreneur. And then I think it's really important to turn the ideas into sustainable venture. You know, one of our senior advisors and a longtime entrepreneur, one of the first Poles who took IPO'd three companies, took them to market, wrote a book about this, said to us, always define the fastest path to success, which really translates to fastest path to money. As an innovator, you don't really think about that aspect as much, and it's crucially important. So whether we are intrinsically more innovators, more entrepreneurs, doesn't really matter. You need both to succeed in a startup.
Yeah, yes, certainly that applies to me too. I feel more an innovator than an entrepreneur, but I feel entrepreneurial in the sense that I like taking ideas and making them a business potential, at least a seed for business. You know, when I started with IBM, I worked on a solution for fabric manufacturers to quickly design fabrics on a screen instead of waiting for a loading machine and 2 weeks later seeing the impact on an actual piece of fabric. I could do it in seconds. So for me, that was a breakthrough, and it allowed the designers to be a lot more creative and figure out what they wanted to see and how it would look before it even existed. And then I started working with speech recognition, and I was responsible for the first solution in the hands of radiologists and pathologists to dictate their diagnosis when looking at x-rays at night. They wanted to work in darkness. They hated using computers, particularly keyboards. So they wanted to be able to talk to the computer and have computer take notes, and they didn't want to have to pay extra time for the assistant to take notes whilst they were dictating it. Later on, I started working with a major American car manufacturer who was interested in bringing speech capabilities into the car. And that became a major mission inside IBM to bring conversation capabilities into vehicles. And then I started dreaming of having voice search capabilities so that you can actually talk to the computer and ask for things. And that's back 20 years ago. That was way before Alexa and Siri and Google Assistant came along. And then when that happened, I started thinking of nice dialogue capabilities that you can have with those assistants. Again, way ahead of what the initial capabilities were. Now you see Alexa announcing full LLMs support behind it. But those things existed 20 years ago, and we were prototyping it. So I like the idea of playing with those things. In the early 2000s, I was working with a colleague of mine to bring a wristwatch running Linux to people and use a speech to interact with it. 25 years ago. So those ideas have always fascinated me, and I was lucky to work with companies that allowed me to play with those things. And I was a little entrepreneur in the bigger corporation, waiting for somebody in the company to see the value and convert that into a real product.
Renu, we're both just big kids at heart. That's who we are.
I may invest in what you're playing around in your spare time, because I think that's going to be the next wave. So, but wrapping up, what is your outlook for Drive in the next 2 to 3 years? Maggie, you as the from the business strategy point, and Roberto, you from more from the tech point. What should we expect to see and hear?
Okay, so you know, I think we are definitely approaching a tipping point in the insurance space. Like, you know this better than anyone else that that we've talked with. So. There are enough transportation insurance companies that are suffering from adverse risk selection of drivers. And then, you know, for us, the coaching system, this co-driver system, offering collaboration between human and machine, broadly speaking, sending alerts to the driver makes a huge difference. So the next 2 to 3 years, I would say we are all for safer vehicles, improving the loss experience for insurance companies, but really for everyone, improving profitability specifically for insurance. And eventually, I think everyone will be able to shift over to this AI driver safety scenario that we're creating in commercial vehicles. But I would just like to add that equally important as this safety angle and, curbing the losses on the road is this angle of quality assurance throughout the process of delivery, for example, right? So transportation for delivery, compliance checks for truckers. This is very, very important. We have these capabilities today, but we would like to hone them and streamline the entire end-to-end process. So really become end-to-end tooling for drivers, for insurers, for fleet managers, you know, everyone that's involved in this, you know, food chain of delivery process, delivery of goods.
Yeah, I have, of course, this is a common objective. I also have a longer-term vision where I see devices like phones and wearable devices to be part of your life even more than they are today. I happen to be co-founder also of a company in Poland that is a leader in symptom checking for health. And I see a not so far distant, not so distant future where you can use those devices to keep a tab on your physical state, mental state, and then give you advice on what to do, what not to do. Give you a sense of the risk you're taking and remind you of that so that you can decide whether to continue doing something or not. That becomes your personal companion. The information doesn't go anywhere. It just stays with you, but it's provided to you. And ideally, I like that to be your guardian angel, if you want to use that term, that helps you navigate the life, stay away from risky conditions unless you want to, and then help you use the technology at best at your fingertips.
Fantastic. Mission-driven technology. That's what you offer. That's fantastic. Well, thank you both. Thank you, Maggie. Thank you, Roberto, for your time and patience. It was a great conversation, and I wish you and Drive the very best.
Thank you very much, Renu. Thanks for the invite. It was a pleasure.
Thank you. Our pleasure, really.